97.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, afternoons.
It's pretty cool. You know, that comes with obviously winning and having a good year and being in the playoffs. Obviously, I worked there before, so I'm familiar with the building, you know, and the GM and owners, and those things are always good.
While talking about the need to focus on the task at hand and the playoff game and the Cardinal situation, that was Vance Joseph from a couple of weeks ago, who was asked the question if he has yet interviewed for the Miami Dolphins job. That was from January 14th of this year. Obviously, that's an older cut, but you get kind of an idea of, you know, his familiarity with the organization. He used to work there, obviously. Now, Gambo, we've gotten to the point where the Cardinals defensive coordinator, we might be entering the final days of that being Vance Joseph. Just about every, well, I shouldn't say that. A couple of the gambling websites that I've looked at have Vance Joseph as the odds-on favorite to be the next coach of the Dolphins. There's been a lot of noise coming out of South Beach the last couple of days that it's going to be Vance Joseph who gets the head coaching job there. I've even read some people on Twitter who aren't that happy about it, who are fans of the Miami Dolphins. It does seem like, and I'm kind of basing this off of social media, that we're building towards this notion that Vance Joseph might be leaving the Cardinals potentially and heading the Dolphins to be their next head coach.
Yeah, I checked with the Cardinals not too long ago. They haven't heard anything yet, so there's no real news. The Cardinals do not want to lose Vance Joseph. They do not want to. But if he gets an opportunity to be a head coach, then he's, you know, it's very likely he's going to take that. The connections with Miami are deep, right? He was there. I mean, he was in Miami for a little while. He's got some Dolphins connections for sure that could help him. This would be a second opportunity to be a head coach in the National Football League. And a lot of times that second opportunity, you learn from your mistakes the first time around and you go ahead. But he was in Miami for just that 2016 season. Miami's defense was 29th in yards and 18th in points. But he was just there that 1 year. You know, Vance is considered a leader of men and a quality guy. And, you know, it is another thing. I mean, I think they're down to one African-American coach in the National Football League right now. I think it's down to just one. I know that's a sore point for the NFL. Vance is a very qualified guy, and I think he's, you know, I've said all along, I think he's worthy of getting a job. We just didn't know if it would be this year or next year.
Yeah, and we had both, you know, we're both fans of Vance Joseph. You in particular, I think it should be pointed out, after the first year of Vance Joseph, when it wasn't working out real well for his tenure as DC, was strong advocate of holding on to him, giving him some time, allowing him to grow into the position. And look, I know it didn't end well for the Cards defense, and I know it didn't end well for the Cardinals in general. The job that Vance Joseph had done all year long was one of the best of any defensive coordinator in the NFL. By the end of the season, injuries had absolutely ravaged that secondary, and it was hard to continue to piece together a game plan when you were so beat up on the back end and you were dealing with limited pass rush and the injuries to J.J. Watt. I thought Vance Joseph did a tremendous job. I think the Cardinals were wise to stick with him, and he's definitely earned this opportunity. I just hope for him, you know, he's probably not going to get another crack at the head coaching job. So I hope the Dolphins are what he wants it to be in terms of stability and the job that is worth jumping for, you know, because not every NFL job is a great one. I don't know how good the Dolphins job would be and whether that would offer him the kind of stability at that position that he'd be looking for. Chances are he'd probably only have himself a couple of years to prove himself when all said and done.
Yeah, and that's the tough part, right? Because that's what happened in Denver. He got to Denver. He won 5 games. Elway thought about making a change after 1 year. They stuck with him. He improved by 1 game. It was 6-10, and that was it. He was done. You know, he worked his, you know, even Elway said, you know, Vance is a good man. He worked his tail off. Unfortunately, we didn't get it done. We didn't win enough football games, and ultimately that's what we have to do. They fired him after 2 years. 5 wins the first year, 6 wins the second year. You don't know what would have happened in the third or fourth year, but, you know, they went on this cycle, and they continue to go on this cycle. The Broncos are firing coaches very quickly. So, you know, that's the thing with Vance. I mean, you've been in a situation where they did that, where you're only given 2 years and then you got canned. So I think if I'm Vance, I want to make sure that I've got some time, and it's not just going to be 2 years. But, you know, there are very few organizations in this league that if you don't show some progress after the first 2 years, decide to bring you back for a third year.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, that's a great way of putting it. There's really the idea of a stable coaching job in the NFL doesn't exist. It's a myth today. I mean, you're lucky, you know, Matt Rhule in Carolina, he's lucky he got a third year to work with. Not a lot of coaches do these days get that third year to work with when they haven't made the playoffs in the first two. And that's going to be something to kind of contend with for Vance. The question now for the Cardinals is what they would do if Vance Joseph left. And I was just kind of perusing through Twitter to remind myself. And yeah, there were a couple of tweets throughout the course of the morning from people kind of posting odds on gambling websites that Vance Joseph is now like the clear favorite to take that job. So what, just in a broad brush kind of sense here, do you think the Cardinals would look inside or do you think they would look outside for their next defensive coordinator position?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I'm sure that if you're Steve Keim, you've got a list of candidates if you lose your offensive coordinator, if you lose your head coach, if you lose your defensive coordinator, you lose your offensive line coach, right? That's what every good GM has. He's got this list of guys. And you go over it with your coaches as coaches change to make sure it's a good fit and everything. And, you know, Cliff now would have a little bit more say in coaches, I think, than he did, you know, after, you know, when he first got here and he didn't really know a whole lot. So it's a good question. There's a lot of quality guys out there. You had a list of quality guys out there. I think one of them was Brenston Buckner, but a lot of guys were from outside the organization. You know, guys that have just gotten fired recently. You know, Mike Zimmer, Vic Fangio, guys that are quality defensive guys that you might be able to get.
Yeah, there were friends over at CardsWire.com. Candidates, if Vance Joseph leaves, they put out six names. Two of them are internal, four of them are external. The two that are internal are Bill Davis, the current linebacker coach for the Cardinals. He's been a DC three times for the 49ers, for the Cardinals, and the Eagles. That would obviously be continuity. Brenston Buckner, who, if memory serves, was a guy that some of the top college programs were going after. I think Clemson was going after him, if I remember. And there was another, it might have been Oklahoma, it might have been somebody else in the SEC who was making a run at the Cardinals defensive line coach. He's a real popular guy, I think, in that locker room in terms of his ability and kind of his leadership. I think he's very popular with the players. Potentially he could be promoted. The four names outside the organization are four very familiar names that everybody's going to know. One of them, and these are all just suggestions, I don't know if any of these guys are actually going to get the gig or not. One of them's Wade Phillips, who last we heard was the defensive coordinator of the Rams. He got let go after the 2000 season. Don Wink Martindale, who was the defensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens, just got let go about a week ago in a move that shocked everybody.
Shocked everyone,
yep. Stunning. Mike Zimmer, the former head coach of the Vikings, who was let go a couple of weeks ago. He was defensive coordinator from 2000 to 2013 with the Cowboys, with the Falcons, with the Bengals. A lot of head coaching experience there, but a lot of experience coaching up a defense. And then a guy who just got let go from the Denver Broncos a couple of weeks ago, Vic Fangio. A lot of names in there, three of them in particular, former head coaches in this league. And there is part of me that wonders how that would play in that room. It worked fine with Vance Joseph. Would they want to go that route again, getting a former head coach?
Yeah, I think you would want somebody that, I mean, look at the when Cliff was out. I mean, the job Vance did when Cliff was out for that short amount of time and had to miss a game. So I think that they would want somebody that, you know, that has that, you know, head coaching experience. I would expect that. It's not, I don't think it's 100% necessary, but I think that would be a benefit. Somebody that's had head coaching experience that can lean on Cliff a little bit here and there, and somebody for Cliff to lean on, more importantly. Somebody that Cliff can lean on. Now, as a defensive coordinator, you're coming into a job where, let's call it like it is, yes, they won five games in his first year and eight games in his second year and 11 games in his third year, but you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody that thinks Cliff is definitely going to get two more years.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So if you're a defensive coordinator, it's possible you could be hired, come in for 1 year, they blow out Cliff, and then you're gone too. So it's not the best situation to come into, you know, based on that, based on the fact that it's not as secure, because even though Cliff won 11 games and made it to the playoffs, there's a lot of us that believe that there needs to be more improvement next year in a lot of different ways for Cliff to be able to stay beyond next year.
And it's for that, and that is kind of the soft tissue point to this whole story, right? And you got to squeeze on it a little bit. That is one of the biggest questions about this is, you know, if Cliff is on any kind of a hot seat next year, does that limit the candidates that you get to talk to? Does that increase the candidates you get to talk to? Because there's a sense that they might have an opportunity to be a head coach if something happened with Cliff. And then something you said a second ago, and these are all questions I don't know the answer to. It's just kind of interesting to speculate on. How much juice does Cliff have when it comes to who his next defensive coordinator is, right? I mean, he's been in the league for 3 years. You would think as a more established head coach now, he should have more say than he did the last time around in this process. But maybe being a guy who's on the hot seat, he doesn't have as much say as a guy who's been established for 3 years and took his team to the playoffs. He might, I don't know how much say he would have in who his defensive coordinator is, because he didn't have a whole lot of say the last time. He would certainly have more than the last time. I just don't know if he'd have a lot more, Gambo. I don't know.
Yeah, you would think in the history of this league, a guy that took a 3-win team to 5 wins, 8 wins, and 11s would have so much control and so much say, right? It's just so odd.
Right.
It's just so odd. I mean, if anybody would have said, you know, the day that they fired Steve Wilks, they're going to hire a guy that's going to turn this thing around in 3 years, win 11 games, and have the Cardinals in the playoffs, man, you'd be giving that guy, you'd be thinking, I'll give that guy the key to the city if he could turn this mess around.
Yep.
It was a disaster with Steve Wilks.
And now we don't even know if he's going to be able to choose his own. You would think a guy like that would be able to choose his own DC. I don't know if Cliff's going to be given that kind of luxury and that kind of power, despite everything he's accomplished. It's a weird situation. I don't know quite how to read it yet, what happens and how this is going to go down. But if Vance leaves, that becomes a very interesting role for the Cardinals to fill, and I don't know how much say Cliff Kingsbury is going to have in it. Maybe more than I give him credit for. Maybe not as much as I think. I don't know. It's going to be a thing to watch. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, there's some people I think he's going to get that job again. The Cardinals, the best thing I think is to bring Vance back. I think that's the best thing. But they'll pivot. There's a lot of quality guys out there, man. The guys you just named. Man, Zimmer and Martindale and Fangio, man, there's a lot of qualified defensive coordinators that you could bring in. And you're going to have a new look team in many ways. I mean, you'll have a bunch of new players that will come in on that defense. And it will be interesting. But I do think, based on some of the people in Miami, Vance definitely has a shot at that job.
Yeah, when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, an unexpected story today. Playoff bonus checks. Have they been written? Are they in the mail? What's behind that story? And surprising, or maybe not so surprising, news from the NFL today about one head coach who's stepping down. We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, afternoons.
Another weird day for the Arizona Cardinals. Another weird story for the Arizona Cardinals that we need to talk about for a few minutes here. Came from Jason LaCanfora, whom I've always found to be not the most dialed in NFL insider in the world. Just a personal observation on my part. Nothing against the guy personally. I've never met him. Just in the world of the Schefters and the Rappaports and the Jay Glazers. It's not like I always go to LaCanfora first. He tweeted out this morning, Arizona Cardinals ownership definitely not pleased with how the season ended, hearing coaches yet to receive their playoff bonuses. Pro Football Talk, within 30 minutes, 45 minutes of that tweet, a source with knowledge of the situation calls the report, quote, complete BS, close quote, pointing out the coaches are absolutely getting the checks. The Cardinals, who were not contacted by LaCanfora before he posted his tweet, said the playoff bonus checks are in the process of being issued. The Cardinals pointed out that the team was eliminated only 8 days ago.
Yeah, like it takes time to process it and go through payroll and get on your next chat, right? Come on, that seems ridiculous.
That seems
so ridiculous for that to even be mentioned.
It seemed ridiculous to me, too. Like, really? I mean, You're what? You're standing by your mailbox, tapping your toe, waiting for the check to pop.
Wait, wait. You want? I think maybe people want you wanted Venmo to you.
Maybe.
Hey, we're in the playoffs Sunday. I want my. They're not gonna cut that. You know, maybe there's. You know, maybe there's a different rate for first round, second round, Super Bowl. So they're not gonna pay you beforehand.
No,
I mean, this is a non-story. I mean, this is unbelievable. But, I mean, you know, it's you would expect. That it'll be in then whatever the guy's next paychecks are. But they had to wait to find out how far they were going to go in the playoffs before they decide to pay them their one playoff round, two playoff rounds, three playoff rounds, Super Bowl round, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. My knee-jerk reaction when I saw the story was, I mean, come on, really? It's just barely a week old when the season ended. But it does... I mean, look, Luck and Fora didn't pluck this out of thin air. He obviously got this from somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody.
No.
And it does suggest to me that there might be some unrest on that coaching staff, that there might be some nervousness on that coaching staff, that there might be a little angst about how things ended and some kind of eagerness to make sure the check clears, because obviously – you know, nobody has any reason to be happy with how that season ended. And so the fact that Lock and Fora got this from somebody somehow suggests to me that not everybody is hunky-dory with how everything ended. And maybe this story kind of reflects that a little bit. You understand what I'm saying?
Sure. Sure. I think that's what it is. I think you're seeing all these things and... You know, was there a meeting? Was there not a meeting? I mean, you know, Michael Bidwell. I mean, obviously, you're not happy. Nobody's happy when they have the season that the Cardinals had, where you're 7-0, 10-2, and then you fall apart and then you get blown out. The only team to get, I mean, they got blown out in the playoffs, and so I mean, I think everybody could assume that. You know, Michael's not like, oh my God, it was great. No, you know, you want more. It wasn't good enough.
Right.
It's got to be better. So I think everybody kind of knew that was the case. It was just a lot of debate. Was there a meeting? Was there not a meeting? I was told that there was no meeting that day. There was absolutely no meeting. They didn't all get together that day and decide that, you know, that the blank was going to hit the fan and stuff like that. But, you know, Michael said, you know, obviously he's not happy and that there have been some internal discussions and things like that.
Sure.
And that's what you would expect out of an owner after a season is over. Try to figure out, hey, what went wrong?
And I think the reporting about the meeting, whether there was one or not, the reporting about the checks and whether they've been sent or not is reflective of a broader issue going on with the Cardinals, that there's a lot of uneasy feelings over there right now. And I again, that's just my, you know, from 30,000 feet looking at it from a distance, kind of guess what's going on. Well, you know, my guess is that there's a lot of kind of unease about how that season ended. I don't think it's going to translate into anything regarding Cliff or anything regarding Steve. I think if something were going to happen there, it would have happened by now. God, I hope it would have happened by now. But I do think that it is led to everyone kind of walking on eggshells a little bit, whether it's about a meeting or whether it's about playoff bonus checks. There's just kind of some nervous tension in the air about the organization, because when you're 10-2 and you've got the best record in the NFL and you can't even get out of the first round, quite frankly, there should be some people who are uneasy about that. And I think you're seeing that reflected in these stories now.
Yeah, but this is not the Cardinals of, you know, this is the Cardinals of Michael Bidwell, not Bill Bidwell. This isn't, you want an extra pair of socks, you got to pay for it. Hey, we're going to send you your check, but we're going to deduct the $29.99 on the FedEx fee.
Sure,
because
sure.
We're not paying for that. And that was the old Cardinals, and it was a cheap way of doing business. And, you know, they got laughed at, and people made a mockery of it when they would do that. You know, player comes in and sees a deduction of $25 from his check. Why'd you deduct $25? Oh, well, we had to send it FedEx, so you're paying for it, not us. Like that was a cheap way of doing things. Michael's not like that.
Not at all.
So for that stuff to come up, it's just for that stuff to come up about man, that was 25 years ago. That's not now. That's not this Cardinal organization.
And I totally want to echo that. I'm bringing up the part about the nervous tension in the air, but Michael doesn't do business that way with the people who work for him and who work over there. So if checks are supposed to come, I would imagine checks are going to come. But obviously, everyone's a little uncomfortable about it. Gambo, it is 3:23 in the afternoon. Sean Payton began his farewell press conference at 2:00. He's still speaking. It's an hour and 23 minutes in, and Sean Payton, I'm looking up at the monitor here in the Oxygen Community Studios, and Sean Payton is still going, talking about what he's going to do.
I don't know what's next is the big headline in the New Orleans paper. He informed the organization today that he was stepping down. It's one of the longest and most successful runs by a coach in their franchise history. He is still young. He's 58 years old. A lot of people think he'd be a top target for an on-screen position, TV, sure. Major TV. Broadcasting yep. Network. He'd be great at it. There's no question about that. They hired him in January of 2006. Think about how long he's been there. January of 2006, they hired him. So he was great there, but he is saying he doesn't know what's next. He just knows that he just wants to take a break from coaching.
Yeah, Diana Russini tweeted out earlier today, there were teams who knew Sean Payton was trying to figure out what he wanted to do next and that he wanted to possibly leave New Orleans. Based on multiple conversations with league sources, there were teams that explored ways to make a move and hire the 58-year-old. But everything I'm reading from all of these NFL insiders suggests that coaching is just not an option for him right now. Adam Schefter, there are many things Sean Payton could do this year. Coaching an NFL team is unlikely to be one. He remains under contract in New Orleans for three more seasons. He wants some time to decompress, and the Saints would want compensation if they were to ever relinquish his rights. Never forget, the Arizona Cardinals got a draft pick from Tampa Bay when they hired Bruce Arians as their coach.
They would get one if they lost Vance Joseph, too, by the way.
They would. A comp pick. They would get one. Yeah, I think they'd get a couple of compensatory picks, if I'm not mistaken. The Saints, I could see a year from now, after taking a year off, you recharge the batteries, maybe you go do a little media to stay around the game. Sean Payton would be a very, very hot commodity a year from right now, and as long as that team were willing to give some kind of compensation to the Saints to hire him, I think he'll be back in this league again. He even said today, quote, retirement, I don't think is the right word today, close quote. He'll be back.
What's incredible about him, and think about this for just one second, the guy spent 15 years with the Saints. Do you know what the worst record he had was?
Ooh, was it 7-9?
Oh, boy, look at you. You genius, you. That's why you know the shapes of states on a map. That's why you would really dominate the 399 games, puzzles, and trivia challenges specially designed to keep your brain young. 7-9 is the worst season he had in 15 years. That's unbelievable when you think about it.
Yeah, incredible. It's incredible when you think about it. And the duo of Sean Payton and Drew Brees, the second winningest duo in the history of NFL football when you're talking about a quarterback and his coach. Only Belichick and Tom Brady have more. He'll be back. I think it just sounds like he needs a year to recharge his batteries. I have a sneaking suspicion he'll be back coaching somebody. When we come back next on the Burns and Gambo show, there's no doubt the Suns are and continue to be the best team in the NBA, even though they made things way too close against an undermanned Jazz team last night. But armed with his new contract extension, what is James Jones going to go out and do with the trade deadline, which is rapidly approaching? We'll talk about that, go over some ideas next on the Burns and Gambo show.
FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, afternoons.
Suns beat the Jazz last night. Very short-handed Utah Jazz team, missing six of their top seven guys when it comes to minutes played per game this season. How these two teams fare tomorrow night, we'll see. In terms of who's available, we don't know. We know this. The Suns have won seven straight games. The Suns are off to what ties, I think, the best start in franchise history. I think they're tied with the 06-07. I'd have to go back and look for sure after this many games. The only other team that has gotten off to this good of a start, this team is tied with. Everything is going great for the Suns right now. Knock on wood when I say that, of course. The question, Gambo, becomes, with trade deadline on February 10th, what, if anything, will they do before or on that day to make themselves better, to give themselves a chance to win their first ever NBA championship? That date is a very important one upcoming in the next couple
of weeks. Yeah, it is. And then, listen, nothing that happened to Cameron Payne or Jay Crowder is going to affect the decisions right now. There were no breaks. There were no tears. There's no surgery needed. Jay's day-to-day and Cameron Payne will be reevaluated in a couple weeks. So I'm not expecting anything with those two guys.
Before you go on, that's significant. I mean, that right there is a significant piece of information you've got, because there was some concern, certainly by me and by others, that those two injuries, especially Jay's, given how he ran off the floor as soon as he fell awkwardly on that wrist, that those two injuries so close to the trade deadline might force the Suns into having to do something to account for that, and you're saying that that is not the case with either of those injuries.
No, I checked with people in the organization today that felt that, yeah, because you know, that they caught a break. There was no tears. There's no breaks. There's no surgery needed for either one of those guys. Jay's day-to-day, and Cameron will be reevaluated. So they feel like they're in a good spot there. Look, they don't have a lot to offer. Other teams will be able to offer more. You look at a guy like Eric Gordon, would be great. A lot of experience, playoff experience. But their best chance of getting players right now, this is how they feel. Now, I still think that they could pull off a trade, but they are going to be a big player in the buyout market, and every year it happens, because what they have in the buyout market is they still have about $4 million left on that exception. They used part of it towards JaVale McGee, and they still have about $4 million left. Now, what I was told today from somebody in the organization is the belief is that they can use it all on one player, that it's not a prorated thing. Like, if we decide we want to give all $4 million to a guy, we could give all $4 million to a guy. So that is what I was told. I don't want to double and triple check that, but that is what I was told from somebody with the organization, that they feel that they can do that, which would give them the upper hand, right? If it's not prorated and they have that $4 million exception, a player gets bought out. Usually a team says, okay, go find out what's out there, because if instead of me paying you $8 million, if I can pay a little bit less, I'll do that. Now, if the player can get more money, he could use that towards the team buying him out and saying, okay, here, instead of paying me $8, just pay me $5. And I just want to get out of here. But the buyout market is still something that I would look at as the Suns being a destination, having an exception that other teams may not have. That could be where they pick up a player.
It's interesting, because you look at assets, and you just mentioned a second ago that the Suns might not have enough in the way of assets to be able to make a deal. And you do try to figure out, okay, how much is Dario Saric worth, given that he's not going to play the rest of this year and he goes into the last year of his deal on his contract next year? How much is Jalen Smith worth, knowing that he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, and there's no guarantee that if you trade for him that you're going to be able to keep him, because the Suns didn't pick up that option? And then you start getting into draft picks. Now, I don't know if you feel the same way. I think you do. But as far as I'm concerned, every single first round draft pick for the next 7 years is for sale. I'm not even like overemphasizing for effect. I'm being literally serious. Every single first round pick for the next 7 years is available. I'm throwing everything up against the wall in order to win a championship this year or the next. I don't care about my first round pick in 2026. I know I probably should. I don't. Everything to me is about winning a title this year or next, while you still have this great version of Chris Paul and Devin Booker together in the backcourt. So for me, I don't know what the interest level in Saric is. I don't know what the interest level in Jalen Smith is. But, man, I'll mortgage every single first-round pick I've got if that's what it takes to improve my team this year and give me a better shot. Every single one.
I don't disagree with you, at all. I mean, you start to look at, players at the Sun. When the Suns were good, under Mike D'Antoni, 2007, the 29th pick, Alondo Tucker. And with their second round pick, DJ Strawberry. And in 2008, they got Malik Hairston. Don't forget about that first round pick, Earl Clark.
Oh, Earl Clark, yes.
And Taylor Griffin and Amir Prejzic and Donnie Lloyd. You start to look at some of the picks and you're like, okay, during that time frame when they were picking 27, 28, 29, what were you getting with those picks? And a lot of those picks were, they were not very good picks. So I'm of the agreement with you. Like, I don't want to give up, and I'd lottery protect almost anything for in case of emergency.
Okay.
But if I'm talking about a pick at 25 beyond, I'm willing to give that up. Yes.
Yeah, you do your due diligence and make sure you protect it. But the buyout thing is interesting, because, boy, we've had, you and I, a lot of conversations about the buyout market. And so often than not, we've talked about this idea that the buyout market, oftentimes guys are going to go places where they're going to be promised certain things, right? Promised minutes and promised an opportunity to play. The Suns aren't going to be able to offer that necessarily in the buyout market. Their rotation is pretty set. Any guy they'd get on the buyout market presumably would be more of an insurance guy in case something happens. But by having that exception available to dangle out there, perhaps all of it, you can say to a guy, okay, I can't promise you minutes. I can promise you $4.5 million, you know, and if you want to come here for $4.5 million for 2 months of work, 3 months of work, I can't guarantee you're going to play more than 5 minutes a night, but I got this money I'm going to dangle in front of you, and I would think that would make for a nice equalizer for the minutes that you can't promise a guy in the buyout market, I would think.
Yeah. And that's, you know, the buyout market. Yeah. You always want to know what will my role be and, you know, how many minutes am I going to get? And guys want guarantees. But that money thing is interesting because, you know, they've got that to dangle. They've got the rest. It's part of the exception that was spent on JaVale McGee. I think about $6 million or so. The rest of that exception is still available. Now, it is of the belief, people in the organization, that they can use it all at once and not, you know, not just prorate it. Like, I could give you all $4 million. I'm going to give you $4 million. I'm not going to prorate. You get all $4 million because they got it to give. And if that's the case, that very well could be a nice chip for them with a player that he could either get that money himself or use it to entice the team to make sure that they go through with the buyout.
The question becomes, what would you want? You know, okay, you've got some money in your pocket to go shopping at the store. What do you want to buy? Do you want to buy? You're fine at the center position. You've got plenty of those. Got Bismack Biyombo, just another great game last night. He is putting up unbelievable numbers in his short stint so far with the Suns. We've already seen what Jalen Smith is capable of. We've already seen what JaVale McGee, who's going to join us later today, is capable. What are they? You know, backup point guard. Do we still have trust issues with
Landry
Cameron
Shamet.
Payne?
You got to replace Landry Shamet. Has not played well. I'll take the replacement for him. Now I got him under contract for a couple more years, so I'm not getting rid of him. But if I could find somebody that could play better than him right now and give me shooting off the bench at that two guard spot, I'd be interested in that.
That's a good answer. That's a really good answer.
That would be my guess right now. Can I get somebody to score on that second unit? Can I get somebody who can come in and knock down some shots to help? That's what I would look at.
That's a good answer. The other good answer I would think would be depth at the four. You know, just to make sure you've got all the bodies there that you need in case something happens with Jay, in case something happens with Cam Johnson, and you need a little depth there. I think those are probably the two answers because Shamet, for all the money they gave him, he has been off to a real inconsistent start so far to this season. And we're halfway through, and he still hasn't quite found his groove yet coming off that bench. Those are both really, really good answers. When we come back, fans have been waiting in line to get in since 10 a.m. this morning in what could be the game of the year and maybe the game that reawakens passion for a sport that we've all kind of lost a little from over the last couple of years. We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, afternoons.
Everybody knows on the Burns and Gambo Show who's got the sources, or the sauces, depending on how you want to say it. Everybody knows that it's Gambo. Everybody knows that it's definitely not me. Everybody stays in their lane on this show when it comes
but,
to.
But you know the important stuff. Like you know the shapes of steaks. Well, that matters.
It really doesn't. When you're hosting a 4-hour sports talk radio show every day, it really has no bearing whatsoever on the conversation. But Gambo, you buried the lead here. I'm not even talking about myself. I am talking about the director of today's Burns and Gambo show, Lauren, on the other side of the glass.
Okay.
She is rivaling you for sources. She is rivaling you for breaking information.
Oh, that's good. I can take a break now.
According to her, they have been lined up outside Pauley Pavilion since about 10 o'clock this morning to get in the building.
Let's go!
To see third-ranked Arizona versus seventh-ranked UCLA. I don't want to expose her sources. I don't want to get her in trouble. But she's got it from good authority that there are have been people lined up in Los Angeles since early this morning waiting to get into that building for a good, old-fashioned throwback college basketball West Coast extravaganza between the Bruins and the Wildcats.
Tell me you're in. Tell me you're in tonight. 9 o'clock. It's a little late. I know it's past your bedtime. I know 9:30. I know 9:30, man. You know that those eyes start shutting. You know that those two glasses of wine you had at 7 o'clock, they start to work their way in. I know you.
Wow.
Outside in the backyard with the fire pit on for an hour. I got your routine down.
Gambo's knowledge of my nightly routine is scary how accurate it is.
Exactly.
Frighteningly on point.
Man, I have been pushing you to watch U of A basketball. Pushing you. I make my wife watch it with me.
We've had one conversation about this. Let's not make it sound like you've been trying to talk me into this all year long. We've had one conversation about this so far.
I've talked to U of A a bunch this year. I have all the U of A fans. You're the only one who talks U of A. Listen, I'd like this team. I just asked Casey Jacobson. I said, hey, who do you got tonight? He's like, look, this is the biggest regular season Pac-12 game I remember since Dylan Brooks against Lonzo Ball, Oregon and UCLA.
God, really? That was a long time ago.
He said, that's the biggest regular season Pac-12 game. Arizona's number 3 in the country. They're playing UCLA, number 7 in the country, at Pauley Pavilion. This is going to be fun. And they're saying, I was reading in the U of A paper, the Arizona Daily Star, this is the biggest Pac-12 game in Pauley since the top-ranked Wildcats visited in 2013-14 season.
So you're talking about 7 years. You have to go
seven, eight years.
Since the last time there's been a game this big. To answer your original question, yes, I'm going to stay up. Yes, I'm going to watch it. I don't know if I'm going to be live tweeting it the way I know you will. But I know if I fall asleep at any point, I'll just need to check your Twitter timeline to find out exactly what happened. Yeah, I'm going to give it a go tonight because
as I've
said many times, and you know, we've had this conversation we have had many times. College basketball has lost a lot of its appeal for me the last couple of years during the pandemic, and which is odd because for a while there, it was my favorite thing in the world to watch. It was my number one thing in the world to watch, and I loved in particular watching U of A basketball. I spent my first year and a half of college there. I used to sit in the student section at McHale Center back in 1989 and 1990.
Bear down. I knew it by heart.
I knew it by heart. I used to fly the flag from my house, for goodness sakes, back when I was a young man. So for me, it kind of goes back to my roots and my youth. Yeah, I'm going to watch it tonight because this is number 3 versus number 7. And for anybody who loves or loved college basketball, man, watching U of A and UCLA when they're both good battle it out, that is some real retro-type stuff right there.
Yeah, they play again at McHale. They'll play February 3rd at McHale. And then, look, obviously, they might play each other in a Pac-12 tournament. So there's some big games coming up between UCLA and ASU. Dave Pasch and Bill Walton will be on the call for the game tonight. They're expected a sellout of Pauley Pavilion. It's because it's a late game for them. It's 8 o'clock their time, 9 o'clock our time. But this is just a huge – now, I don't know if I'm so bad at pronouncing names. Tubulus is playing or not because he had that ankle sprain. If he does – I saw John Wilner. He thinks U of A wins with or without him. He thinks they win because he just thinks that they're better. But if they – there's a feeling that if Arizona can get by UCLA in these two games, they're going to get a number one seed. That if they can get by, no matter what happens, if they can win this game against number 7 in the country and then beat them in McHale, they're going to end up with a number 1 seed.
Yeah, it's possible. They're ranked number 3rd in the country right now. Auburn is number 1. Everybody's got them as a potential number 1 seed right now, and certainly a win on the road like this against a 7th-ranked team would go a long, long way. If it seems like an odd night for a game like this to be happening – it is. It was delayed. It was originally supposed to be played on December 30th, which I think was a Thursday night, if I remember. But the Bruins had a bunch of COVID-19 issues, so they kind of had to punt on it. But ESPN worked hard, found a slot for the game. You mentioned Passion Walton, very entertaining as always. It's, I mean, you come for the basketball, stay for Passion Walton talking about God only knows what those two are going to talk
conference
about.
Conference of Champions. I mean, yeah, this is gonna be fun.
What was weird is that, go ahead. Say what you're going
to
say.
Yeah, UCLA got blown out by Gonzaga, and Gonzaga played in Arizona. Look, it's a Tommy Lloyd thing, but they play exactly the same. So they play – I've seen UCLA a couple times. They really like to control the tempo of the game. If they do that, they'll have a chance. They lost to Oregon as well. That's their two losses. But they got blown out by Gonzaga. That's their one loss. They won all the rest of their games. They're 13-2. Arizona just had that one loss on the road that was Tennessee. Outside of that, they haven't lost. So this is I wish this game was earlier, but I'm really excited for this game tonight.
Yeah, Mick Cronin is the coach of UCLA, and even he kind of expressed surprise that when the schedule originally came out, that a showcase game like UCLA in Arizona wasn't on a Saturday, and instead was going to be on a Thursday. Cronin said, quote, "I'd like to play them on a Saturday with college game day in Westwood. If the Pac-12 would have asked me last summer, which they're not going to do, and I don't blame them because they shouldn't be asking any coach, I would have given them my opinion of how good Arizona was going to be. They got the transfers, they got everybody back, and they hired a good coach. To me, there was no doubt they were going to have a top team in the country, so I would have put the game on Saturday and tried to have college game day," close quote. It's a Tuesday. College game day is not going to be there. They're not going to play on a Saturday this year. But even Cronin is suggesting, like, hey, I kind of knew this was going to be a big deal again with them hiring Tommy Lloyd and with what we've got going on around here. So hopefully Tuesday night, what's it going to be, 11 o'clock on the East Coast? Hopefully it gets the attention and hopefully it lives up to the hype. But yeah, look, I used to love college basketball. I've lost my love for it a little bit with the pandemic.
You might get it back tonight.
I might start to get it back tonight.
Hey, listen, you know, maybe a shot of espresso tonight instead of a glass of wine. You know, maybe we get you some cappuccino.
Cappuccino with a little Bailey's in it, maybe?
Huh? Well, but a mocha.
Little hot chocolate with some peppermint schnapps in it, maybe?
Listen, anything with a little caffeine, keep you up, you know? You know, maybe, you know, instead of the glass of wine and the outside barbecue pit, the fire, and then I'm tired, I'm going to bed, maybe.
I don't know if you've heard.
Maybe we find a way to keep you up to watch.
I don't know if you've heard. They've got this little thing, technologically speaking, Gambo. Yeah, it's called the record button. And if I find myself drifting off, I can always just hit that orange R button on my remote. And I'll just watch it at 5 o'clock in the morning when I get up anyway. I mean, I've always got that in my back pocket.
That's true. And I don't mind that at all. But as long – yeah, but I do wonder if this game – and I think there are a lot of people like you. I do. College basketball was affected more than any other sport with the cancellations and you're playing and you're not playing. It was kind of crazy, the college basketball with the pandemic. I wonder if this is the type of game that can get – a lot of people back into basketball. Yeah. Number 3 in the country, number 7 in the country, two good teams. If it's a great game, right? If it's a great game, you know, maybe this is the type that can get some people back into college basketball.
We'll see. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, another win for the Phoenix Suns against another shorthanded team and another moment where the Suns, we would have liked to have seen them put that shorthanded team away, but it didn't happen. We'll talk Suns basketball next in the 4 o'clock reset here on the Burns and Gambo Show.